Open your Bibles to Psalm 27. What are the things that we have in our lives that really stress us out? The things that really intimidate us? The things that overwhelm us? The things that give us fear and anxiety? It would be helpful to be thinking about those things, I think, as we consider Psalm 27, a psalm of David that really focuses on how he deals with those kinds of situations. He starts the psalm by saying, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. Whom shall I dread?" When you see the Lord as your light and your salvation and the defense of your life, it's kind of a triple shield that protects you from all kinds of terrors and threatening circumstances. He sees God as sort of his place of refuge. He sees God as the one to turn to in these difficult times. There are people maybe who feel like they're just able to handle anything. You know, I can deal with it. That's not David. David's not saying in some sort of a self-confident fashion, you know, I think I can handle this. I'm pretty tough. I'm pretty capable. I know how to deal with things. Got a good army. You know, I've got the weapons. It's none of that. It's trusting in God's strength. It's seeing that compared to the Lord, the things that otherwise he might have feared or might have been in dread of are nothing. That's the thing. We need to turn to God, not trump up some sort of unrealistic self-confidence. But once you see the Lord's ability, once you see him as your light, your salvation, and the defense of your life, then it doesn't really matter about the enemies, the armies, or whatever other kinds of threats and stresses we may face. He says, "When evildoers came upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell." Now you think about, you know, a whole bunch of enemies, you know, on the attack. They're marching toward you. And he says, "They came to devour my flesh. They stumbled and fell because of the Lord." It reminds me of a literal time that more or less happened in John 18 when, you know, the chief priests and the scribes had gotten together quite a unit of soldiers and thugs, whatever they were, to come out to arrest Jesus one night. I mean, he was defenseless, 12 disciples with a couple of swords, that's about all they had. And there was a bunch of them with swords and spears and lanterns and whatever. And it says in verse 3 of John 18, "Judas then, having received the Roman cohort, and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. So Jesus, knowing all the things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to them, 'Whom do you seek?'" You know, they were trying to find Jesus. They weren't sure if they knew where he'd be. Judas thought he knew. But they were looking for Jesus. They didn't find Jesus. Jesus found them. Jesus advanced to meet them. And they answered and said, "Jesus the Nazarene." He said to them, "I am he." And Judas also, who was betraying him, was standing with them. So when he said to them, "I'm he," they drew back and fell to the ground. I've tried to imagine what was going on. You know, you wouldn't have really thought that was going to happen that way. But I think he spooked them. You know, they're on edge. Think about trying to arrest Jesus. Think about the, ways Jesus has been able to handle anything. He's been able to escape from their clutches time and again. Look at all the miracles he's performed and things like that. And I have to think that deep down some of these guys knew this was wrong. And so they're on edge. They're tense. They're expecting to have to, you know, sort of, you know, get Jesus inside. He's probably hidden somewhere and they got to find him out. And when he comes to them and says, it's me, they're like stumbling backwards, which is the way it is when the enemy meets the Lord. It's not the Lord who stumbles and falls. It's the enemy that does that. And in any kind of a challenging circumstances we're in, we don't need to be spooked. We don't need to feel intimidated or overwhelmed. When God is with us, it's the enemies that fall backwards. Look at verse 3. Though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war arise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. Confident and not fearing, because the Lord steps in and the Lord delivers. In times of, you know, intimidation and threat, we need to think about the times that the Lord has done that. I think that's what David's looking at. He's thinking about other times when evildoers came, when the host encamped. And God was there and God delivered. What were times in your life when you felt overwhelmed and you turned to God and you prayed for help and God delivered? We tend to forget those too quickly. It's not good to forget them, both from the standpoint that God needs to be praised and thanked for those things, but also because we need to remember those things as an aid to faith. When you think about the times God's delivered in the past, it gives you a lot more confidence and courage to face challenging circumstances in our time. I think about in 2 Kings chapter 6, there was a pretty intimidating circumstances. Elisha has been warning the king of Israel where the Aramean army was going to go, because Elisha knew from the Lord where the Aramean army was going to be. It made the Aramean king think there was some sort of a rat, you know, some kind of a person that knew, you know, kind of one of his close associates that kept informing the Israelites, because they never went where the army was camped out, wherever that turned out to be. How did they always know where that army would be? And they told him, oh, it's not that. It's not that somebody's informing them. It's that they've got Elisha the prophet. You know, he knows where you are all the time. And he's like, well, we'll capture him. So he sends the army down. And verse 14 of 2 Kings 6, he sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. Now when the attendant of the man of God had risen early and gone out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was circling the city, and his servant said to him, alas, my master, what shall we do? That would be a bit of a difficulty. Imagine that you were facing an army surrounding the city, and their whole purpose is to capture you. They don't care about anybody else, you and your servant, you know, since he's with you. And you know that. Wow. I can't imagine. But what Elisha says in verse 16, do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. You don't have to worry about it. We got more with us than they've got with them. Elisha and the servant. It doesn't look like it, does it? That looks pretty overwhelming. Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Now, if you could only see that, can you imagine what that servant felt when he saw the Lord's horses and those chariots of fire? That kind of puts the army surrounding the city in a whole different perspective. You remember what happened on that occasion. It was kind of funny. Elisha prayed, and God struck the Aramean army with blindness. And Elisha came down and offered to lead them where they ought to go. And he leads them right into the middle of the Israelite army. And when they open their eyes, they're surrounded by the Israelite army, and so forth and so on. But the point is, it doesn't matter if a host encamps against us. It doesn't matter if war arises against us. We serve the God who gave David the victory over Goliath. We serve the God that killed 185,000 Assyrian soldiers in one night by the work of a single angel who came down. We serve a God that no matter what the stressful things we face, when we turn to the Lord, our heart does not fear, we shall be confident. He says in verse 4, one thing I have asked from the Lord, that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in his temple. There is something about people who do one thing. You know, our problem often is we have very divided interests and pursuits. And so we don't manage to do any of them real well. People who do one thing tend to get the job done. There was one thing that David sought: to dwell in the house of the Lord, to behold his beauty, and to meditate in his temple. We need a more singular focus on wanting to be with the Lord. Can you think about what it would be like if we could always behold the Lord in our mind? If we were always thinking about the Lord in our heart? If his word was always before us? Think about how it would transform us. The more we look at the Lord and admire the Lord, the more we become like him. How easy it would be to pray and be devoted to God if there was one thing we were seeking: to be in the presence of the Lord at all times. And once we have that as our singular focus, then he says, in the day of trouble, he will conceal me in his tabernacle. In the secret place of his tent, he will hide me. He will lift me up on a rock. The idea is that no matter what the threat, he sees the Lord as a security, as a hiding place, as somewhere where he could trust and rely on and feel confident and secure because he was with the Lord. That's what we need, is that kind of closeness to God where no matter what the trouble is, we feel the protection of the Lord. We see him as the one who hides us, the one who gives us stability, lifts us up on the rock. He's our protection. He's the one who gives us the victory. And again, seeing God like that, seeing him as the one who gives the victory, he said, and now my head will be lifted up above my enemies around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord. As God gives us the victory, as we turn to him and trust in him and entrust ourselves to him, think about the sacrifices we offer to the Lord, the gratitude that we feel toward him. Think about telling others what he's done, shouts of joy. Think about singing his praises. We need to be eagerly praising the Lord and telling others about what he's done as he gives us victories and as we find security in his protection. The tone changes a little bit in verse 7. Evidently, there's a renewed threat. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice, and be gracious to me and answer me. It's easier, perhaps, to feel a sense of trust in the Lord when there is no threat. But once David faced a new threat, he's crying out for God to be gracious and answer, to hear him. We'll face new trials. We'll face new troubles. We'll face other things that scare us, that stress us, that intimidate us, and we need to turn to God and cry out to him and ask him to listen and answer. You know, you can tell the sincerity of somebody's praying by who they want to listen. The Pharisees wanted other people to listen to their prayers. But the man who really trusts in the Lord wants the Lord to listen to his prayer. That's all that really matters, is for God to hear. And he repeats that because he feels such a great intensity of need. He says, when you said, seek my face, my heart said to you, your face, O Lord, I shall seek. Don't you appreciate the submissive spirit in that prayer? God said, seek my face. He says, I'll seek your face. Whatever God says, that's what he does. That's the kind of responsiveness we need. If we expect God to hear our voice when we cry out to him, he expects us to hear his voice when he orders us. It would be unreasonable to think, well, God, I want you to listen to me. But God says something to us, and well, I don't really care what you say to me. No, God conditions his listening to us on our listening to him and responding to him. We need to be sensitive to his will, eager and ready to do as he asks. It's kind of interesting that he asks him to seek his face, because that's the one thing that you couldn't see and live, according to Exodus 33. Of course, we understand seeking his face is to seek his approval, to seek closeness to him. In verse 9, David's worried about this. He says, "Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my help. Do not abandon me nor forsake me." That's our worst nightmares, to think that the Lord could turn his face away from us, that he'd abandon us, that he'd forsake us. That would be the worst possible thing, the feeling of being rejected by the Lord. I don't think any of us really like being rejected by anybody, and that's one of our challenges, is to be willing to be rejected by men as we serve the Lord. But to think about being rejected by God, God just turning his face away, "I don't want to look at you anymore." That would be a nightmare for us. And that's what David is begging God, don't do that. You know, don't turn your face away in anger. You've been my help. I've trusted in you. I've counted on you. Please keep being there for me. I still need you. I need you to be with me and to help me. He says, "For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me up." It's not normal for parents to forsake their children. I mean, in a sense, that's the kind of thing Kyle was talking about in the Lord's Supper talk. You know, you expect a father to intensely love their child, a mother to be extremely close and attached to a child. But there are cases where parents have just abandoned their children, where parents have not had normal parental love and attachment to their children. And I think about Isaiah chapter 49. This is an interesting passage in Isaiah 49:15. "Can a woman forget her nursing child and have no compassion on the son of her womb?" I mean, the closeness of a mother and a small child is legendary. I mean, you better not try to take a little baby away from its mother. You know, it's not just mother bears that would be fierce in that situation. There's just there's an instinct, there's a bond there. That really is even hard, I think, for fathers to understand. You know, we're close to our children, but there's something that even surpasses that in a mother. But listen to the question. Can a woman forget her nursing child and have no compassion on the son of her womb? You think, not often. That'd be a rare time. He said, "Even these may forget, but I will not forget you. Behold, I've inscribed you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are continually before me." God is saying, my attachment to you is more secure than a mother's to her small child. It would be really unusual for a mother to forget her nursing child. But that's even less secure than my love for you. I've written you on the palms of my hands. I see you every time I look at my hands. God's love and God's closeness to us, his reliability and constancy in caring about us, it's greater than parental love. No human being will ever care about me as much as the Lord does. There are times we feel abandoned and betrayed by people. There are times we are abandoned and betrayed by people. That happens. We'll never be by the Lord. There are even some really heart-wrenching stories of children who have been abandoned and betrayed by their parents. There are some horrible situations that happen that are hard to understand. But one of the things that an abandoned person needs to remember, you have a father who loves you more than any parent has ever loved their child. That's what he's saying. You know, there is my father and mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me up. You know, the Lord will love us and does love us in a way that no human being ever could. So that's helpful when we've been rejected or abandoned, even if it were by our parents and certainly by others. He says in verse 11, teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a level path because of my foes. That request, teach me your way, you find a lot of times in the Bible. Psalm 119 is full of that. We want God to teach us what? His way. Not the easiest way. Not the way we like the best. Not our own way. We pray to God, teach me your way and lead me in a level path. We can't trust our way. We're facing an enemy like a roaring lion seeking to devour us. We need to be on God's path. We want to listen to his words. We want his guidance. Because if we go our own way, if we go the way that's comfortable, convenient, or whatever, we're vulnerable. You know, we want to ask God, teach us your way. We seek his way in his word. We beg him to help us understand it because we want to go his way. We are afraid of the foe. We have an enemy who's trying to devour us. And so we want to know and do God's will. Do not deliver me over to the desire of my adversaries. For false witnesses have risen against me and such as breathe out violence. There are a lot of people who want to misrepresent and slander those who serve the Lord. That's been true for a long, long time. Think about Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Think about Moses and the things that were said about him. Think about David and all kinds of accusations. Think about Jeremiah, who was constantly being ridiculed and belittled. Nehemiah, who they said, well, even if a fox jumped on that wall, it'd tear it down. And all that sort of stuff. It's not uncommon for God's faithful people to be under assault. We ask for God, don't give me into their hands. Help us and be with us. And then he closes with an expression of trust in verses 13 and 14. I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Without trust in God, who knows what would happen? Who knows how horrible it would be. But David has confidence. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. God is there for us. We can count on him. Our faith causes us to cling closely to him in every challenging situation. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. God is worth waiting for. He's the one we trust in. And even when we do not see his hand visible at the moment, even when we're not sure how he's going to work out the challenge, we wait and trust. He is reliable. He is the rock. He is the fortress. We do not need to fear. We do not need to be overwhelmed by anxiety and stress in any situation, no matter how big the army or how close they are. Wait for the Lord. Be strong. And let your heart take courage, just wait for the Lord. Faith is what enables us to endure the tension between the afflictions right now and the future deliverance we trust in and count on. We hang on to the Lord in faith. We know that he's there. We know that he will not forsake us. We know that he loves us. We have all the experiences in our life and through the scriptures of where God has delivered in worse circumstances than what we're in. And so that gives us confidence and hope. Think about the stressful situations, intimidating situations, the overwhelming situations that we're facing and that we will face, and think about this psalm. Think about the trust in God, the reliance on God, the waiting on the Lord in those really unsettling times. Let's reread this psalm and then we'll stand and sing. Think about this as we read it. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. Whom shall I dread? when evildoers came upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war arise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. One thing I have asked from the Lord, that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in his temple. For in the day of trouble, he will conceal me in his tabernacle. In the secret place of his tent, he will hide me. He will lift me up on a rock. And now my head will be lifted up above my enemies around me. And I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice, and be gracious to me and answer me. When you said, seek my face, my heart said to you, your face, O Lord, I shall seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You've been my help. Do not abandon me nor forsake me, O God of my salvation. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me up. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me in a level path because of my foes. Do not deliver me over to the desire of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breathe out violence. I would have despaired unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord.